information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
To border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Lasting compassion requires a level of persistent emotional attention. In a media culture, indifference to the vision of human suffering gradually sets in. But not here on the 120th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. It's April 24th, 2009, 420. FEMA drills, Fort Detrick disease, dead horses, and the federal DNA database. Sex crimes and videotape, cybersecurity, Stratcom and social networking, Harmon, AIPAC, and congressional corruption, Pirate Bay, Public Enemy, Die Hard, Angels and Demons, and tons, tons more. It's your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. It's episode 120 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Sometimes I try to do things. It just doesn't work out the way I want it to. And I get real frustrated. Like, I try hard to do it. And I take my time, but it just doesn't work out the way I want it to. It's like I concentrate on real hard, but it just doesn't work out. And everything I do and everything I try, it never turns out. It's like, I need time to figure these things out. There's always no one there going, hey, Mike, you don't even notice that you even have a lot of problems lately, you know? Maybe get away. And like, maybe you should talk about it. You feel a lot better. And I go, no, it's okay, you know. I'll figure it out. Leave me alone. I'll figure it out, you know. I'm just working on myself. They go, well, you know, if you want to talk about it, I'll be here, you know. And you'll probably feel a lot better if you talk about it. Why don't you talk about it? I go, no, I don't want to. I'm okay. I'll figure it out myself. They just keep bugging me. They just keep bugging me. And you feel on the side. You got to see it. You're not going to come and make a play back. You will not make a play.
In my room, and I'm just like staring at the wall, thinking about everything, sitting down, thinking about death. And then my mom came in, and I didn't even know she was there. She called my name, and I didn't hear it. And she started screaming, Mike, Mike! And I go, what? What's the matter? She goes, what's the matter with you? I go, it's not wrong, Mom. She goes, don't tell me that. You're on drugs. I go, no, Mom, I'm not on drugs. I'm okay, I'm just thinking, you know? Why don't you give me a test? She goes, no, you're on drugs. I go, Mom, I'm okay. I'm just thinking. I go, no, you're not thinking, you're not drunk. None of people don't act that way. I go, Mom, just give me a Pepsi, please. All I want is a Pepsi. And she wouldn't give it to me. All I wanted was a Pepsi. Just one Pepsi. And she wouldn't give it to me. Just a Pepsi. She was good for the things that we like to see. Some young people got crazy. It's just with them, it's crazy. I'm not saying that. I'm sitting in my room. My mom and my dad came in. They pulled up the chair and they sat down. They go, Mike, we need to talk to you. I go, okay, what's the matter? They go, me and your mom, we know this lady is having a lot of problems. And you've been going off for no reason. And we're afraid you're going to hurt somebody. And we're afraid you're going to hurt yourself. So we decided that it would be in your best interest if we put you somewhere where you can get the help that you need. And I go, wait, what are you talking about? We decided my best interest. How do you know what my best interest is?
I wanted was a Pepsi filled with high fructose corn syrup. A classic, my friends, from the suicidal tendencies, the suicidal tendencies. Institutionalized. We went to your schools, we went to your churches, we went to your institutional learning facilities. But fortunately, I went to MediaMonarchy.com. Once the light went on above my head, I realized that shit ain't right. And so, for the last several years, I've been trying to spread the word far and wide. Friends, family, anybody who will check out the page and the information and do a little reading themselves. Turn off Susan Boyle. Or God knows whatever thing you're watching. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Like I said, my name is James. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and 1 p.m. Eastern Time, simulcast on the Revere Radio Network. And thanks to 98.5 Free Radio Olympia, replaying Media Monarchy when it's nice and fresh. Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, BoulderFreeRadio.org, KBFR 93.9, also playing MediaMonarchy.com. And again, thanks to Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org, who not only serves up Media Monarchy and the Corbett Report and Ground Zero Lounge, and Alan Watt, Wayne Madsen, Webster Tarpley, on and on and on and on. Actually, if you just subscribe to Glenn's feed on RadioForAll.net, that'll pretty much cover you for all your alternative radio news needs.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org are just some of the numerous ways you can get in touch with me at MediaMonarchy.com. So yes, we've made it to the 120th episode. This is all nerve-wracking. And we got a lot to go over. And I just did the B-side of episode 119. So I'm all warmed up, fired up, ready to go. Let's look at Google News right now on this morning of April 24th, 2009. Mexico shuts schools amid deadly flu outbreak. Dateline Mexico City. This from the New York Times. Mexican officials scrambling to control a swine flu outbreak that has killed at least 16 people and possibly dozens more in recent weeks shuttered schools from kindergarten to university for millions of young people in and around the capital on Friday and urged people with flu symptoms to stay home. Swine flu not as serious as SARS, says Reuters. Mexico City suspends schools over flu epidemic, says the Associated Press, and literally thousands of other articles. Breaking for you this Friday morning. If we look elsewhere on Google News, we of course see from the Washington Post that blasts have killed more than 135 people in 2 days in Iraq. Ford has lost $1.4 billion, but beats expectations. Now, as I mentioned in the previous episode, as we see the big three caving in, we know who will reign supreme and rise from the ashes, and that will, of course, be our dear Ford in heaven. Obama won't use the term genocide in the statement on the 1915 Armenian killings. That's from the LA Times. Safety lapses found in West Virginia Bayer chemical plant explosion. Media Monarchy covered that for you many months ago. Autism fundraiser at Oregon Ridge Park. And from the Christian Science Monitor, we're going to have to get more into this later because there is a clip, and it's great. Hillary Clinton digs Ron Paul. She uses her chance in front of the committee that Ron Paul was on the other day to kiss his ass and tell him how great he was on the campaign trail, and that he had, of course, far more people than she did. Active, real, grassroots, real people. Not phony, foundation-funded, left-cover bullshit. So that's just some of what's going on Google News this morning, April 24th, 2009. Like I said, it's the 120th episode, and something we've done for the whole run of the life of Media Monarchy is we cover the terror drills. Thanks in no small part to the fact that there were over a dozen war games and terror drills going on in the morning of 9/11, some simulating hijacked airplanes crashing into government buildings. We know that on the morning of 7/7 in London, there were drills going on targeting the exact same buses and trains as were hit in the actual attack. We've seen many terror drills here in Portland, and they're all around the country, desensitizing you to seeing the military on your streets. And of course, drills act as a great cover to covert black op military industrial globalist operatives to use the drill as a cover for false flag terrorism. False flag terrorism has been used throughout history. Fake an attack, hit your own gang, if you like, in order to get going what you want to get going. And in this case, it's homeland tyranny. And again, homeland, we never used the word homeland before on 9/11. That's a straight-up Nazi word. And if you'll dig a little bit, you'll see that Bill Clinton, he wanted to call it Heartland Security back when he was trying to get the Omnibus Crime Bill passed when, you know, Oklahoma City was going on. But we'll get to that in a little bit. Because right now, we're looking at July 27th through the 31st, National Level Exercise 09, FEMA Terror Prevention Drills. We mentioned this back in November on MediaMonarchy.com, where we note that Northrop Grumman are just one of the private military contractors that are going to be involved in National Level Exercise. And so we've got the press release and all the bits from themselves, from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Of course, set up back in the day, tied in even with Oliver North and Rex 84, Readiness Exercise 84, Congressman Jack Brooks, in the Iran-Contra hearings, asked Oliver North about Rex 84, about those terror drills. And if these things really did happen, that they would maybe, you know, have to suspend the Constitution. So this is nothing new, but they're getting bigger and bolder and scarier. So this from Kurt Nimmo. National Level Exercise 09, FEMA Terror Prevention Drills, July 27th through the 31st. FEMA is preparing to take its martial law exercises to the next level this July. According to a fact sheet buried on the FEMA website, the agency will host National Level Exercise 2009 in LE09, July 27th through the 31st. Quote, NLE09 will be the first major exercise conducted by the U.S. government that will focus exclusively on terrorism prevention and protection, as opposed to incident response and recovery. It's designated as a Tier 1 national level exercise, or top-off, which is what they originally called it. They did four top officials drills. If you recall, some of them took place in Oregon, and there was all that bomb-sniffing dog who smelled real bomb residue when it was in the Lloyd Center, you know, just half a mile away from where I live. It's a Tier 1 national level exercise, which are exercises conducted annually in accordance with the National Exercise Program, NEP, quote, which serves as the nation's overarching exercise program for planning, organizing, conducting, and evaluating national level exercises. NLE09 is going to focus on intel and info sharing among intelligence and law enforcement communities and between international, federal, regional, state, tribal, local, and private sector participants in the aftermath of a notional terrorist event outside of the U.S. So-called exercise play will concentrate on preventing subsequent efforts by the terrorists to enter the United States and carry out additional attacks. NLE will be an operations-based exercise to include activities taking place at command posts, emergency operations centers, intelligence centers, and potential field locations to include federal headquarters facilities in the D.C. area and federal, regional, state, tribal, local, and private sector facilities in FEMA Region 4, which includes the states of Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. International FEMA exercises taking place in Region 4 of the North American community. Jason Burmis on his new Info Warrior show on the 20th went over national level exercise a whole lot. I embedded that three-part clip for you up in this posting. National level exercise 09 FEMA terror prevention drills. We, of course, hit another flashback back to April of last year, where we have national level exercise 08, 8 straight days of terror drills. Now, of course, as we get much closer to this, we'll start to break down more, and I'm sure we will find out much, much more. We got a lot of shit to deal with before we make it to the end of July, I can tell you that. But now let's go to Frederick, Maryland. We're back in 1998. Coming back from the opening date of Sonic Youth's 1,000 Leaves tour at the 930 Club in Washington, D.C., me and two other friends were arrested for possession of marijuana. Ooh. So there's always a special, dirty, ugly place in my heart for Frederick, Maryland, and it's not that far away from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, back where I worked at WSHC. Fort Detrick disease samples may be missing. From the Frederick News Post, Army criminal investigators are looking into the possibility that disease samples are missing from biolabs at Fort Detrick. As first reported in the Frederick News Post in print by columnist Catherine Heerbrandt, the investigators are from the U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Division, that's CID.Army.mil, and they're stationed at Fort Meade, like our good friends at the National Security Agency. Chad Jones, spokesman for Fort Meade, said SID is investigating the possibility of missing virus samples from the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, USAMRID. Chad Jones said the only other detail he could provide is that the investigation is ongoing. Fort Detrick does not have its own SID office, Jones said, which is why Fort Meade's SID was brought in. Jones said he couldn't comment on when the investigation started. SID is responsible for investigating crimes where the Army is or may be a party of interest, according to the U.S. Army Criminal Investigation Command website. USAMRID is the Army's top biodefense lab where researchers study pathogens, including Ebola, anthrax, and plague. And, you know, sometimes they get out and get mailed to people who don't want to pass the Patriot Act. And it ain't Bruce Ivins. Rest his troubled soul. It ain't Stephen Hatfill. It's Philip Zack. I've been yelling this for years on the show. Nobody wants to talk about Dr. Philip Zack and the anthrax case. But continuing with the article from the Frederick News Post. In February, USAMRID halted all research into these and other diseases known as select agents following the discovery of virus samples that weren't listed in its inventory. The Institute's commander, Colonel John Skorvrak, ordered research halted while researchers, or workers rather, conducted a complete inventory of the Institute's select agents. Selectagents.gov. That inventory is nearly completed, though the exact end date isn't known yet, said Carrie Vanderlinden, USAMRID spokeswoman. Vanderlinden said she didn't know about the SID investigation and referred question to the SID's head public office, yada yada. There's no indication whether the SID investigation is connected to USAMRIID's re-inventorying of its select agent stocks. We hit this on Media Monarchy in February, that they halted research because they're missing things. Now, Danger Room on Wired notes that Army Biolab's missing vials may never be found, which they say, oddly, you know, isn't that scary. Vials of a potentially harmful pathogen have gone missing at Fort Detrick, the Army's main biodefense lab. But don't freak out. The samples of Venezuelan equine encephalitis, VEE virus, Venezuelan equine encephalitis virus, are relatively small. The Army's found no evidence yet of criminal conduct, the Washington Post reports, and the virus usually causes only a mild flu-like illness, although brain inflammation and death are possible. It has potential for use as a biological weapon, but is far less lethal than some of the other agents the lab works with. And that's the real thing to keep in consideration. This isn't anthrax. It's a relatively non-lethal biological agent. Yeah, it's highly infectious and easily aerosolized. Yes, that makes VEE a good candidate for military apps and ops. And yes, as a virus, once a person is infected, there is no cure. Like the flu, you got to ride out the effects. But it's not really a mass casualty, if you're nasty. If you're a terrorist, looking for lots of bodies. We'll probably never know exactly what happened, one Army official tells the Washington Post. It could be the freezer malfunction. It could be they never existed. And wouldn't that be the greatest trick that our friends in the disease-making industry would tell us? Never existed. So we can hit that Washington Post link. Army nearly done with probe of Fort Detrick pathogen lab. Here's where it gets strange. And here's where we get the updates. And here's where Danger Room better fucking worry. Detrick missing Venezuelan equine encephalitis samples. And 21 polo ponies from Venezuela died in Florida. Cryptogon. Always doing great work. Cryptogon.com. CryptoGon. Cryptogon.com notes, according to CBS News, the people investigating the deaths of horses in Florida, there's a little backstory there we don't know, some horse race. The people investigating the deaths of the horses in Florida are focusing on the possibility that a tainted batch of vitamin supplement called Biodil, B-I-O-D-Y-L, Biodil, might be to blame. All of the horses that died received the supplement. The five horses that didn't receive the Biodil are fine. Okay, maybe that's it. But would you believe that Fort Detrick is missing three vials of Venezuelan equine encephalitis? U.S. Army launching that investigation into the disappearance of the vials from the lab. Biodil is made by a company called Merial, M-E-R-I-A-L, Merial, which is, of course, a joint venture between Merck and Aventis. Merial produces pharmaceutical products and vaccines for livestock, pets, and wildlife. Are the two incidents related? We, unfortunately, have no idea right now. Another update, pharmacy made a mistake in the horse drug. That's from the Washington Times, and there are other links in here to CNN and to Wikipedia to read more about Venezuelan equine encephalitis, and of course that aforementioned CBS News report. Another one from the Associated Press, supplement suspected in death of polo horses. 21 prized polo horses that mysteriously died before one of the sport's top championships were given a supplement that likely caused their deaths, the leader of the Venezuelan-owned team told an Argentine newspaper. So, we've got Fort Detrick missing vials of Venezuelan equine encephalitis, and then we have 21 horses from Venezuela die of the very same thing.
Breaking news right now at noon. We have new information into what caused nearly two dozen polo ponies to die just before a match in Wellington over the weekend. CBS 4's Gwen Belton has the information that just came into our newsroom. Gwen?
Elliot, the team captain says a vitamin supplement that the horses were injected with was tainted. They were given that vitamin supplement just before the match started. Juan Martinero, who's the captain of the polo team, told the La Nación newspaper in Buenos Aires that all of the horses had received Biodil injections before the game. He he said that there were five horses that didn't get those shots, and they're all fine. Nero also said the vitamin is given to the horses to help them recover from exhaustion. A veterinarian in Wellington who helped treat the 21 dying horses at the Polo Club Sunday told the Palm Beach Post that BioDeal E is not approved for use or sale in the United States. However, he says a licensed veterinarian could obtain the vitamin supplement by submitting a prescription for the recipe. Now, necropsy and toxicology tests are being performed on several of the polo ponies. Those results are expected back on Friday. The first match since the ponies died is scheduled for today at 3 p.m. CBS 4 News has a crew there and will bring you more starting at 5, live in the newsroom. Gwen's up in CBS 4 News.
Elliot? Gwen, thank you.
I'm sure it's all just a coincidence. There's nothing to be worried about. Places like Fort Detrick and Plum Island and Porton Down, they're doing good work. It's just an accident and coincidence that they create these deadly bioweapons, and then sometimes during a drill, they get out. Like in the case of the foot and mouth outbreak, thanks to Porton Down. This ties in with, I think, one of the two main things we may be staring at. And I'll get into it in a little bit. But are we basically, what's the other shoe to drop? Is it going to be a big cyber, solar, space war 9/11 event? Or is it going to be an ugly bioweapon, animal, pandemic, food, world order 9/11 event? So just some of the flashbacks. And of course, again, I follow the disease labs as much as I try and follow the drills on MediaMonarchy.com. So just a couple of flashbacks just to dip your toes into this funky pond. Miltech, Biolabs, SpySats, Germs, and CERN. Daily dose of terror, drills, DARPA, simulations, and directed energy weapons. Anthrax updates, Ivan's labs, and Hatfield's predictive programming. All those from the last year or so on MediaMonarchy.com. But they just don't want to create deadly bioweapons. And again, in the Project for a New American Century, the big think tank, the big report, Rebuilding America's Defenses, you know, the one that basically said they wouldn't be able to do all that stuff unless they had a catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Elsewhere in that paper, they say that perhaps we can get to the point where race-specific bioweapons could be a feasible weapon of war. Now we have, from the New York Times, and again, we've reported this before, it just gets backed up again and again and again, and now, of course, by mainline sources that you can't fucking deny. FBI plans a massive expansion of DNA database. Law enforcement officials are vastly expanding their collection of DNA to include millions more people who have been arrested or detained, but not yet convicted. The move, intended to help solve more crimes, is raising concerns about the privacy of petty offenders and people who are presumed innocent. Which, the last time I checked, everyone's fucking innocent. You're presumed innocent. And people who are presumed innocent. That's a clever little twist there. Until now, the federal government genetically tracked only convicts. But starting this month, the Federal Bureau of Investigation will join 15 states that collect DNA samples from those awaiting trial and will collect DNA from detained immigrants, the vanguard of a growing class of genetic registrants. The FBI, with a DNA database of 6.7 million profiles, expects to accelerate its growth rate from 80,000 new entries a year to 1.2 million a year by the year 2012. That's a 17-fold increase. FBI officials say they expect DNA processing backlogs, which now stand at more than 500,000 cases, to increase. Law enforcement officials say that expanding the DNA databanks to include legally innocent people will help solve more violent crimes. They point out that DNA has helped convict thousands of criminals and has exonerated more than 200 wrongfully convicted people. The criminal justice experts cite Fourth Amendment privacy concerns and worry that the nation is becoming a genetic surveillance society.
DNA databases were built initially to deal with violence, sexual crimes, and homicides, a very limited number of crimes. Quote from Harry Levine, a professor of sociology at City University in New York who studies policing trends. Over time, more and more crimes of decreasing severity have been added to the database. Cops and prosecutors like it because it gives everybody more info and creates a new suspect pool. And that's how all these things work. All the draconian laws, all the things that initially sound reasonable, will ultimately be used on you. For whatever they need to use it on you for. So if you're not sorting your recycling correctly, the green shirts will come get you. If you make uncomfortable faces at the airport, those behavior detection officers will have a little discussion with you. So they try and always start out with reasonable things. Let's put RFID chips in our pets, you know, so they won't get lost. And then we'll put RFID chips in our Alzheimer's-ridden grandparents so they don't get lost. And then we'll put RFID chips in those dirty AIDS patients. And then. But as we've noted, in a lot of situations, the biggies cause the problem, but the littles, they gotta suffer. So whether it's, you know, tainted foods caused by the major, either, you know, peanut manufacturers or the evils of Monsanto and the like, it trickles down and it's gonna hurt the small producer. Because, you know, if you have some kind of community stability, if you guys all work together and grow food and live and love and help each other, well, what are you going to need the state for? But in a lot of cases, as we're now, of course, going to start to descend into a little more of the nasty news, you see who's behind a lot of the events. And, of course, you know, we always try and correct and not say, the government did it. The CIA did it. They're huge, bumbling bureaucracies filled with good people doing good work that are compartmentalized, that don't exactly know that when they put that square peg in that square hole, what happens on down the assembly line. But when we look at criminals, criminals like to get in positions of power so they can get away with it. Like CPS perverts. Or how about this? Starting off this next post, military feds and cops, bombs, lies, spies, and sex crimes. A Marine was arrested at Boston's Logan International Airport with bomb-making materials.
Tonight with a developing story, a Marine under arrest at Logan for carrying a loaded gun and other weapons on board. Good evening, everyone. I'm Mark Ockerblum.
And I'm Allison Bologna. That Marine was on his way here from Las Vegas. Fox 25's Diana Rocca was live at Logan Airport with more. Diana?
Allison and Mark, that Marine had taken a red eye early this morning from Las Vegas and was laid over here at Logan. When he went to board a connecting flight to Charlotte, he had to recheck his bags. And when baggage handlers looked inside, what they found was a small arsenal. A United States Marine on his way back to Camp Lejeune in North Carolina won't be going home anytime soon. Police say 22-year-old Justin Reed tried to board a U.S. Airways flight at 8 this morning with a loaded gun and explosives.
It's frightening.
It's pretty scary, you know, with all the TSA stuff going on, with all the baggage checking. They send you bags to the X-rays.
Police say Reed had taken a red eye from Vegas and had a layover here at Logan. He was separated from his bags and had to recheck them before boarding a U.S. Airways flight to Charlotte. That's when baggage screeners found the gun, rounds of ammunition, and enough to make an explosive device, a grenade fuse and detonator, explosive mixture, and numerous switches.
Wikinews notes, in addition to WBZ.com and Boston.com and MyFoxBoston.com, that, of course, it's not yet known why Justin Reed was in possession of the items, and an investigation is ongoing. If we can cite the, albeit much worse, situation of Richard Poplawski, the Pittsburgh shooter, I'm sure it'll come out that he was actually a fan of online conspiracy theories and was worried about Obama. Homegrown scareism. Or how about this guy? Ex-FBI agent Philip Kent Baxley arrested in Alabama on a Texas charge of child indecency.
I am very shocked to hear about Mr. Baxley.
Mohammed El Zahra is the director of coaching for the Mobile Soccer Club. El Zahra says Kent Baxley is a board member and a coach. On the soccer club's website, Baxley's biography says he has coached teams with the club and also was a coach in the soccer program at Murphy High School.
My experience here is nothing but positive that I've heard, and he's been tremendous as far as helping grow the community.
Baxley also has a Facebook website where he lists himself as a member of the Baldwin County Indoor Soccer Center. And Mobile County Juvenile Court officials confirmed that Baxley has worked at the Strickland Youth Center as a legal guardian in court cases. Baxley was wanted by police at Deer Park, Texas, for an alleged incident in November 2004.
The girl that actually lives in Travis County was here visiting a relative that Baxley was also visiting. And that during the visit, she awoke to him fondling her. She made him stop and he left the room. At the time of the incident, we believe she was around 9 years old.
Baxley was arrested at his law office in the 1100 block of Dolphin Street.
We have no reason to believe any criminal activity has occurred in our jurisdiction.
I believe they'll give him a chance for voluntary extradition from Alabama to Texas. And he'll be taken to Harris County, where he'll then drive.
I hope that in the weeks to come, that we come to the bottom of this and then find out exactly what's going on.
Kent Baxley, ex-FBI agent, arrested on charge of child indecency. More in there to WKRG.com, WHNT.com, Fox 10 TV, and MontgomeryAdvertiser.com. And it gets worse. And it hurts me even more, because this comes from my home state of West Virginia. More ridiculous shit. That's really hard to, you know, always be a strident supporter and defender of my home state. West Virginia FBI police used a spy cam to watch girls undressing. I saw this first posted up. I forget where I got it from originally. They just mentioned that, you know, FBI police were spying on girls. Clicked on the page, saw the dateline said Fairmont. Huh, Fairmont. And then looked at the top of the page and saw that the report came from WOWK-TV. One I remember watching myself when I was in southern West Virginia. So, from WOWK-TV, an FBI police officer is under arrest and a warrant has been issued for the arrest of another officer after the pair allegedly used a security camera to watch girls in a dressing room during a charity prom dress event. Gary Sutton Jr., 40 years old, of New Milton, is charged with criminal invasion of privacy and being a party to a crime, both of which are misdemeanors. On Saturday, April 4th, Hospice Care Corporation held the Cinderella Project at the Middletown Mall in Whitehall. The event offered prom dresses, shoes, and jewelry at affordable prices and raised money for hospice care. Hundreds of people attended the event. Temporary dressing rooms were set up. The dressing rooms did not have ceilings. So Sutton and the other officer were on duty at the FBI satellite control room at the mall during the event, where, of course, they used the cameras to scan over these ceilingless dressing rooms and saw underage girls naked. That's just a misdemeanor, though. It's important to note that the men in question are FBI police officers, not FBI agents. And they give you the links to FBI.gov so you can see the damn difference for yourself. Lastly, on this collection of corrupt misleaders, military, feds, and cops, bombs, lies, spies, and sex crimes, the FBI spied on Tea Party protesters nationwide. This from Paul Joseph Watson, The FBI were spying on Tea Party protesters nationwide during last week's demonstrations as part of a covert program conducted without the knowledge of local law enforcement. This according to a source named as a current FBI agent. The Northeast Intelligence Network reports on HomelandSecurityUS.com that a concerned, unnamed FBI agent has risked his career in blowing the whistle on the fact that Tea Party protesters were subject to covert surveillance. There's a comment posted at the bottom of this posting of a topic we're going to get into in just a few minutes, but as long as the comment is here, I'll go ahead and read it to you, where Rob noted, and I agree, I think we're getting ready to be set up for an internet-related disaster. There's been a lot of news lately about hackers infiltrating core systems. Last week it was the power grid. This week it's the military's expensive pet jet project. In the next few months, I think we'll see either an internet-related disaster or a potential power grid problem. My money's on power grid, as it makes a bigger impact from a movie perspective. Then, the two bills introduced by Jay Rockefeller from West Virginia, John D. Rockefeller IV. Then those two bills introduced by Rockefeller are going to get some attention, and all internet power will be given to the president. There is a major cyberspace war PSYOP building. So is it going to be the cyberspace war? Solar storms, blackouts, power grid, EMP attack? Or will it be the food? Or will it be the enviro health? We got to get into the murder and mayhem. But before we do it, I just keep glancing back at Google News and seeing the Mexican swine flu case getting worse and worse by the moment. Now, from ABC News, the Center for Disease Creation, Control, CDC, says that swine flu cases now total seven. Seven people in California and Texas have now been diagnosed with a unique form of swine flu. But back to the murder and the mayhem. Trash, crash, and the Craigslist killer. But first, more plane crashes. Small plane crashed into Florida home. This was last Friday morning, April 17th, from the Washington Times, as well as the Deutsche Press Agency, as well as YouTube and the Associated Press. A small plane crashed into a South Florida home last Friday morning, April 17th, splitting it in half as rescue teams looked for victims through fire and thick smoke. I think the interesting thing is that the residents of the house had just happened to leave, and I believe that the pilot is the only one who died. Family of five found dead by dad's hand. That's from the Washington Post. Five killed in an M1 motorway crash. That's from the BBC. Six-year-old boy on vacation in Venezuela dies in plane crash. That's from Wikinews. More on Venezuela there. Man accused of triple murder in Illinois denied bond. That's from the Chicago Sun-Times. Bodies of five children found in a Houston ditch. That's from the Associated Press. Files detail the deaths of 14 Los Angeles children. That's from the Los Angeles Times. And 12 people were injured in Washington State after a ride at a fair toppled over. The case of the Craigslist killer captivates America. A medical student who allegedly targeted women advertising erotic services on Craigslist was ordered held without bond Tuesday on charges of murder and kidnapping in a case that has captivated America. Adding to the feverish media coverage of the Craigslist killer case was the televised plea of clean-cut suspect Philip Markoff's fiance. Quote, "All I have to say to you is Philip is a beautiful person inside and out and could not hurt a fly," said Megan McAllister on Good Morning America, insisting that they would marry as planned in August on a New Jersey beach. I cannot find that clip of Megan McAllister on Good Morning America. If you got it, send it, post it, comment it. But this one I wasn't captivated by this story. I wasn't really following it. But again, like Clyde Lewis has been noting recently, the news generates public interest now, not the other way around. And this sounds very Ted Bundy-like. He, of course, had tons of marriage proposals while he was sitting in jail. And finally, on this murder and mayhem posting again, thanks to more great work from Alex Constantine, more updates and curious connections with the crash of Flight 3407. That's the crash, of course, that went down around Buffalo, New York, containing Beverly Eckert, 9/11 widow and activist. She had just met 7 days prior with the Jersey Girls and the Obamasiah. A lot of strange questions. And sometimes maybe it's not the crime, but it's the cover-up. It starts to get really labyrinthine and bizarre, and there's no way I can cover all this on the site, so I just posted up these headlines from Alex Constantine. And even these, without going into them, won't make a ton of sense. Pastor Eastlack joins the CIA in the return of the Cheney clique. Judge hearing survivor suits is Poppy Bush appointee, Ford Foundation shill, and Leonard Peltier criminal. Clifford Law of BCCI fame is representing a surviving family in a wrongful death suit. And aviation expert Randall Brink's fraudulent resume. Strange things going on in Flight 3407. And now it's time for the space war, for the cyber war, for solar storms, EMPs, 2012. It's all swirling around. We're being prepped, like the comment from Rob that I just mentioned to you. So the first posting, cyberspace war, stratcom, solar storms, and weather wars. We again note the Cybersecurity Act of 2009, where in this headline, even Fox News notes, it's got heavy restrictions on internet freedoms. But if we jump to the AFP, U.S. military prepares for cyber command. The U.S. administration is planning to create a new military command to counter cyber attacks on the country's sensitive computer networks, a U.S. defense official said on Wednesday. The move would be part of a planned overhaul of cybersecurity policies now being weighed by the White House, said the official, who, of course, spoke on condition of anonymity. The Cyber Command would likely fall under the U.S. Strategic Command, that's STRATCOM, which already leads efforts within the military to safeguard computer networks from hackers and cyber attacks. Plans to reorganize the government's approach to information technology security came amid a growing threat of cyber spying and attacks, including a breach reportedly of the U.S. electricity grid and of the supposedly secret F-35 fighter jet program.
This is kind of scary. Cyber spies hacked into the Pentagon's $300 billion weapons program, the Joint Strike Fighter Project. The spies apparently stole data on this, the F-35 Lightning II fighter. They took certain design details that could make it easier for our enemies to fend off an attack by the aircraft. All this comes in the heels of a Wall Street Journal report that hackers in China and other countries have infiltrated our country's main electrical grid system. Jessica Herrera Flanagan is a former cybercrime prosecutor at the Department of Justice and former staff director for the House Committee on Homeland Security. Jessica, welcome. I mean, it just seems to me when they say, what we think this might be originating in China, but we don't know that for sure, but yet you look at China and they clearly are building up their cyber offenses or cyber defenses, maybe.
Cyber spies broke into the Pentagon's $300 billion Joint Strike Fighter program. What does this all mean? Jim Lischewski is at the Pentagon with more. Mick, what happened here?
Well, in this case, you know, hackers, and this actually occurred 2 years ago when hackers got into an open file of the F-35 strike fighter through independent contractors. And Pentagon officials stressed that this was not highly secretive, sensitive data. It had to do with maintenance logs and possibly schedules and the like, and did not compromise in any way the F-35 or give any secrets to any possible enemy seeking an advantage over the F-35 strike fighter. But this is a major problem. Pentagon officials say there are thousands of attempts every day to hack into Pentagon or military computers, and that number is up significantly over the past 6 months, more than double according to Pentagon officials, who say that this cyberspace is, in fact, they consider it to be a warfare domain that the Pentagon, the U.S. government, is committed to protect and defend.
We mentioned that many, many, many months ago, that even in their early reports, the names of which escape me right now, but that they basically said they refer and treat the Internet as an enemy weapons system. That's what they think of your Internets. So there were two links in there, and of course Jim Mikleshevsky of NBC pointed out that this fighter jet breach actually happened 2 years ago. So again, they're just now telling you about it to prep you for all this. But there's more research in there for you to do to the Washington Post, to Threat Level, to MSNBC, to HistoryCommons.org, Media Monarchy, Wall Street Journal, and on and on. Threat Level also notes that cyber criminals have been industrializing to increase their effectiveness. So again, like anything you declare a war on, you're only going to see more of it. But more from Wired, this time from Wired Science. A hurricane-killing space-based power plant. How's this for crazy? A company files a patent to destroy hurricanes as they form by beaming them with energy from a space-based solar plant. Maybe it is crazy, but that same company, Solaren, S-O-L-A-R-E-N, took a first step in that direction this week when it inked a deal with the Northern California utility PG&E to provide 200 megawatts of power capacity transmitted from orbit in 2016. Apparently, sending up billions of dollars worth of solar collectors and using microwaves to send the energy on 2 square miles of receivers in the desert is a little ho-ho-ho-ho-hum to Solaren's wild minds. Quote, "The present invention relates to space-based power systems, and more particularly to altering weather elements, such as hurricanes or forming hurricanes, using energy generated by a space-based power system," Jim Rogers and Gary Spernak write in their 2006 patent application, with a link for you to that. Attempts at weather modification have taken many forms over the decades, from cloud seeding to the strange fans that vineyards use for hyperlocal weather modding. Some analysts have even speculated that geoengineering techniques could allow countries to weaponize the climate by subtly turning an enemy country's breadbasket into a desert. Weather wars. More in there to send you down the hole on all that weather modding that, of course, Wired and Danger Room like to put a nice spin on. We have a solar storm warning from AOL.com, but from ABC News, asking the question, are we ready for a solar Katrina? More than a million without power. The distribution of drinkable water disrupted. Transportation, communication, and banking upset. Trillions of dollars in damage. Hurricanes, blizzards, and other earthly tempests aren't the only natural forces with the potential to sow catastrophe. Severe weather in the sun's outer atmosphere could knock out much of the country's power grid, incapacitate navigational systems, and jeopardize spacecraft, scientists say. While the odds of a solar disaster are relatively small, scientists warn that we need to ramp up our defenses against solar storms, especially given our increasing dependence on technology that is so susceptible to radiation from the sun. It's one of those events that is of low probability but high consequence, Dr. Roberta Malstad, a research scientist with Columbia University's Center for Research on Environmental Decisions. The consequences could be extreme. Links in there, again, to more from ABC News, where they go back through some of the power outages. Remember the blackout in New York a few years ago? Imagine that nationwide, coupled with the Econo crash. The last few notes on this first cyberspace war posting are important, but I don't have time to go into them right now. Discovery of smallest exoplanet yields extraordinary find. That's right, a new planet has been discovered. Ex-astronaut Edgar Mitchell says that man is not alone in the universe. That's from CNN. And, of course, we noted several months ago that the Vatican says, yeah, there's probably aliens out there, setting you up to make sure that it's okay that your phony belief system will be able to accept the new phony belief system that they'll give you when they pull off a Project Bluebeam War of the Worlds New World Religion PSYOP. UK government secretly studies crop circles and the UFO connection. That's from the Honolulu Exopolitics Examiner. And finally, from allnewsweb.com, Brazil's secret government UFO files revealed. And we've seen lots of countries releasing their so-called secret UFO files. We hit the UK just a few weeks ago. But that's all out in space, right? Let's get down into inner space. Social networking and spyware. The first one on this posting is important, and it does remind me, and we'll get to it in a moment, all the talk of pirates. However, the pirates we're going to talk about right here are those crazy Swedes behind the Pirate Bay. From the Telegraph, Pirate Bay prosecution could spawn a flurry of lawsuits. The entertainment industry hailed the successful prosecution of the four founders of the illegal file-sharing website Pirate Bay as a major victory in its battle to recoup billions of pounds in lost revenue. Lawyers believe that the sentencing of Peter Sunde, Gottfried Svartholm Varg, Fredrik Nielsch, and Carl Lundstrom to a year in jail for breaching Swedish copyright law could lead to a flurry of similar lawsuits as Hollywood and the music industry battles to regain the upper hand in the war against file sharing. Jeff Taylor, the chief executive of the British phonographic industry, BPI, which represents the UK record industry, says, quote, "We hope that this decision will encourage British music fans to steer clear of these parasitic illegal download services and support the future of British music by downloading legally."
The Swedish courts convicted four men of helping people to break copyright law by creating and running the Pirate Bay file-sharing website. They've been sentenced to a year in jail, but plan to appeal. The site is used by millions to download songs, films, and TV programs for free. Media giants including Time, Warner, MGM, and Universal are seeking $30 million in lost revenue.
Pirate Bay says it has 22 million users a month. It allows anyone with a computer and an internet connection to download the latest media free of charge. It violates most countries' copyright laws, but it is so popular, it's become the norm. Millions of people are up or downloading pirated music, movies, software on the web right now. And while many choose to take their chances and hoping they won't get caught, with a Pirate Bay trial, a new global community has emerged who feel they're exercising their basic human rights.
It's not about getting free pop music. It's about the right to communicate without the authorities listening in on every conversation you have. The only way to even try to stop downloading is to monitor everything that all ordinary citizens do on the net. I mean, we don't want that kind of society.
As a result of what the Pirate Party calls Sweden succumbing to pressure from the US, a law came into effect this month obliging internet providers to reveal names and addresses of people suspected of sharing pirated files.
I don't feel like a bad person when I do it. Actually, I don't. So, but at the same time, I feel like it's not good for the artists.
They exist because there is a need. So we're not just a need, we're the people.
The anti-piracy lobby considers the law a major victory. Swappers say trying to stop them is like swimming against the tide. Even if the Pirate Bay sinks, the next file-sharing site will set sail right away.
That's from Russia Today. And there's more from Wikipedia and Wiki News on the Pirate Bay trial. But I also note that you should definitely check out Steal This Film and Steal This Film 2 for more on the Pirate Bay in particular and intellectual property in general. Steal This Film, the first part, basically goes over the initial raids in Sweden of Pirate Bay and their initial success against fighting U.S. intrusion into Swedish laws. Steal This Film 2 is far better produced and a more wide view look at information and intellectual property. Going all the way back to the fear of Gutenberg making copies of the Bible, which we could say, see, that didn't lead to the end of Christianity. We do have an update, though, interestingly enough, from Threat Level regarding the Pirate Bay trial, where we learn that the Pirate Bay judge has been exposed as a member of pro-copyright groups. That smells like conflict of interest. One of the four men convicted in the Pirate Bay trial is seeking to have his guilty verdict thrown out after learning that the judge in the trial is a member of two pro-copyright groups, including one whose membership includes entertainment industry representatives who argued in the case. Stockholm District Judge Thomas Norström told a Swedish newspaper that his previously undisclosed entanglements with the copyright groups did not constitute a conflict of interest. So while you wonder what it does constitute, we should note and pull over for a second, and I gotta tell you that we're now into our number two of the 120th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 24th, 2009. My name is James Evanpilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net. Again, thanks to Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, Cascadia Public Radio, and more that I may not even know about, for rebroadcasting MediaMonarchy.com. But back to the cyberspace war, social networking, and spyware. Research says Twitter damages young minds. This from TechRadar.com. If you're a Twitter user, and who isn't these days, with a link to Twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. If you're a Twitter user, and who isn't these days, you'd better stop what you're doing and step away from the computer if you want to save yourself from brain rot. That's the conclusion scientists at the University of Southern California have reached after studying the effects of today's information on human, or rather, studying the effect of today's information age on human brain development. Researchers at the college's Brain and Creativity Institute at the University of Southern Cal say the instantaneous, constant updates from acquaintances on sites like Twitter, Facebook, and other networks are bad for emotional development. In effect, they say the torrent of updates bludgeons the senses into a kind of torpor where young users in particular find it difficult to show compassion for others. One expert explained, "Lasting compassion requires a level of persistent emotional attention. In a media culture, indifference to the vision of human suffering gradually sets in." The work posits that the result could be a society of disconnected individuals only loosely bound by social networks and devoid of what might be considered a traditional moral compass. You have been warned. Links in there to the Daily Mail, Tech Radar, the Brain and Creativity Institute at USC. But now it's back to the feds. Documents now show that FBI spyware has been snaring extortionists and hackers for years. That, as well as this, are from threat level. There's a bit of fretting going on, but unfortunately it's not on a guitar. Feds crack Wi-Fi to gather evidence. Buried in the 150-plus pages of CIPAV-related spyware documents released by the FBI last Thursday, buried in there is a tantalizing nugget that indicates the Bureau's tech experts have more than one way to hack a suspect. In early 2007, FBI agents with one of the Bureau's International Terrorism Operations sections sought hacking help from the FBI's geek squads. The agents were working a case in Pittsburgh, which is not described in the documents, and wanted to know, quote, if a remote computer attack can be conducted against the target. Hack attacks. So they're doing it on the cyberspace war end. Because we know for a long time that they've been doing it on the just boots on the ground war on terror field. P2OG, provocative propaganda, basically goading people into becoming terrorists. So let's have some attacks so they'll attack us, so then we'll know who they are. Then we'll know they're terrorists. Since they fight us back, then they must be terrorists if they object to, you know, people on their soil saying that they're responsible for something and we're going to bring them freedom. If they fight back, they must be a fucking terrorist. And of course, as we wheel it all around and aim it at the American public, you must be a fucking homegrown terrorist too if you don't like what's going on. I got the whole 150 plus pages posted up for you. New declassified FBI documents. I've got it embedded on the page thanks to Scribd, but you can download the 27 meg PDF, again from Threat Level. Get your FBI spyware documents right here. They got it from a FOIA request. Now, I mentioned a couple times this morning alone Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge. Recently, I haven't been able to post up episodes of Ground Zero Lounge. They haven't been archived in the same way, and I don't have the server space to host the shows. But now, I believe, thanks to, again, Glenn at CascadiaPublicRadio.org and his WTC7 channel up on RadioForAll.net, I believe I'm going to be able to start bringing you, again, all the latest episodes of Ground Zero Lounge. The latest one I have for you is fitting and pertinent for our discussions at hand. The Protocols of PSYOP, Operation Bluebeam. This presentation of the Ground Zero Lounge is from April 6th, but written from my man, Clyde Lewis. In the original Alan Moore Watchmen comic, set in an alternate reality, 1985, one of the heroes commits what is essentially a very villainous act for the good of all mankind. He basically contrives an alien invasion so that the United States, Soviet Union, and presumably the rest of the world will join together in peace and harmony to protect themselves against the outside alien threat. The idea of a threat from the heavens or a divine intervention from the skies has been recorded throughout history as a means to create a new government or religious movement. The idea of an event of this magnitude was spoken of by Ronald Reagan in the 1980s numerous times. We played those clips for you. They blew your mind. There is a remote possibility that the powers of the world could fake or hoax an alien threat, or Deus Ex Machina, God and the machine, in order to regain control of a populace run amok. This well-known conspiracy theory is explored at the Ground Zero Lounge as Clyde Lewis demonstrates that there is technology indistinguishable from magic and that it can be used to simulate a paranormal event capable of changing the way we look at God and the cosmos. Is Operation Bluebeam a reality? Will it be used in 2012 to usher in a new world ecumenical brotherhood of man? You got to check out this episode for yourself. I don't have the clip for you, but it's amazing. My man Zach was there live at Dante's. And me and my girlfriend and my man Johnny, who sends me great stories and news links and headlines, we all went and saw Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge this last Monday for his presentation, A Pirate's Lie for Ye, where he went over the breakdown and the backstory of the Somali pirate story, which is basically that they haven't had a government to speak of for many a year. And for a lot of that time, countries were paying them very little to dump toxic waste. So now you have people who are being called pirates, who are basically, you could say, they're criminals with guns, maybe. They don't want your fucking toxic waste anymore. But they're pirates. And pirates are everywhere in the media. And it's Johnny Depp and the Pirate Bay and all of it. The flashback here relates to the massive and I think very important posting on MediaMonarchy.com. If you go back to December, Project Bluebeam, TV fakery, holographic projections, and audio spotlights, where we go through tons of disclosed information from mainline sources of TV fakery, holographic projections. That's basically projecting the image of a deity in the sky. And of course, like the ad in Times Square several months ago that beamed sound into your head, it ties in. I know it sounds crazy. It ties in with geoengineering the atmosphere and the barium that is sprayed in the chemtrails. Tests have been run. It's not a crazy alien conspiracy theory that they are already geoengineering the atmosphere with, among other terrible things, like barium. When you go into how they do the holographic projections, it has to do with barium particles in the atmosphere. They're basically setting up the canvas in the sky to present your favorite deity who will help usher in the new religious belief or the new ecumenical brotherhood of man or whatever you want to call it. War of the Worlds, Project Bluebeam, Fake Rapture, PSYOP, 2012, all coming down the pike very soon. Did I do that justice just now? Probably not. Now, with the amount of coverage I've been giving the murder and mayhem meme and the copycat shooter sprees going on in the last several weeks, I suppose I could have started this episode going over all the related 420 anniversary events. Of course, Columbine, Oklahoma City, Waco, Bay of Pigs, Virginia Tech, Hitler's birthday, Patriots Day, on and on and on. They all seem to somehow come to a head around April 20th. Fortunately, the actual date did not see any horrendous activity, but we ain't out of the woods yet. And returning to my man James Corbett of the Corbett Report, CorbettReport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T Report, Episode 84, April is the cruelest month. Now, that is also a posting I put up back at the very beginning of April, a bit of a news purge of headlines, but it's true. For some reason, March Madness and April Assassinations all seem to center around mass shooters and things. They generally die, except in the case of people like Poplawski, when they're going to be used as propaganda to demonize people who want to defend the Constitution. Not defending that guy. But anyway. I also don't have a clip for you from episode 84 of the Corbett Report. But James notes, 'tis the season for mind-controlled assassins and mass murders. Watch out, though. The corporate-controlled media wants to blame it on the competition. So, episode 84 exposes the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor lies and looks for rays of hope during this season of mass murder anniversaries. This episode 84 of Corbett Report is very important. It's very well done. If you don't know the interesting things surrounding Columbine, the multiple devices, the half-empty school that day, the fact that the son of the head FBI investigator, Fusilier, his son helped make a video with Dylan and Eric 2 years before the massacre of shooting up the school in a neat little video they made for AV or theater class. Timothy McVeigh, when he was pulled over driving erratically in a car without a license plate. The police reports say he was drooling and saying, it hurts, get the chip out of my ass. It gets into the whole realm of Manchurian candidates and mind-controlled assassins. These things are real. Why do you think Frank Sinatra bought up and basically used a hidden clause in his production rights over the film The Manchurian Candidate? Why do you think they kept that movie secret throughout the 60s? While we saw JFK, MLK, RFK all get knocked off in suspicious circumstances, every single one of them. We pay attention to these big events because these big events are used as the currency to do what they're doing. So whether it's 9/11 that is being used to this very day still by Obama, the new change administration, to carry on the same bullshit. If we can look at the events and see that there are enough questions in there, if we can look at these things and see that it's built on a house of lies, well, then maybe we can make some changes. Something else I discovered in doing my early research for 420 is something we're going to get to in just a minute, and I'll explain what's coming up very soon. But first, it's 420 again, Columbine, OKC, Waco, and Y, where, again, we look at the school shooter anniversaries, the copycat effect, and the mass murder contagion. Numerous, tons of articles. There's tons of books and things and all swirling around the anniversary. I just give you a little bit of it and some of the headlines. Columbine students strive 10 years after massacre. That's from the Associated Press. But taking my title, 420 again, from the copycat effect, .blogspot.com. Obviously, one meaning of 420 is directly linked to the Columbine date, as 420 is April 20th, the anniversary of the Littleton, Colorado shootings. This date's also Adolf Hitler's birthday. The Columbine shooters, Klebold and Harris, were extremely conscious that it was Hitler's birthday and often spoke German to each other while walking around in long-backed trench coats videotaping themselves. The use of 420 for almost four decades is also related to the use of marijuana. Adolf Hitler, marijuana, Columbine. For copycats, 420 appears to have served as a reflective mirror. For the rest of us, 420 may reflect a dangerous combination that has resulted in terrible memories that now reach beyond the mere date of April 20th. Flashback to April 2006 on MediaMonarchy.com, Waco, Columbine, and OKC. But from the Washington Times, what police learned from Columbine, the first officers on the scene had never trained for what they found at Columbine High School. No hostages, no demands, just killing. In the hours that followed, the nation watched in horror as the standard police procedure for dealing with shooting rampages in the U.S. proved tragically, heartbreakingly flawed on April 20th, 1999. Flashbacks related to the Virginia Tech massacre in April of 07, campus gun ban disarmed Virginia victims, and anger over U.S. shooting warnings. But from AssociatedContent.com, OKC bombing, Columbine tragedy remembered back-to-back. The Oklahoma City bombing and Columbine school shooting tragedies may be the most publicized acts of domestic terrorism in recent memory. The Oklahoma bombing took away 168 people in 95, while Columbine took far less lives by comparison. But both Oklahoma City and Columbine shook America with brands of violence that could scarcely be imagined by many in those pre-war on terror days. The Oklahoma City and Columbine tragedies are side by side even further, considering that they have almost the same anniversary date. Again, that noted from AssociatedContent.com. Another flashback to April 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com, the Ides of April, Waco, OKC, Columbine, and Virginia Tech, but from WTAP.com, two-year anniversary of Virginia Tech shooting. Last Thursday marked the two-year anniversary of a college campus tragedy. 32 people died April 16th in 2007 in a shooting in Virginia Tech's campus. Since then, colleges across the nation have become better prepared for similar situations. Campus police at Marietta College have created Pioneer Connect that sends emails and text messages to notify students and staff of emergencies. Yeah, just Google how many times those have been used by accident, where parents have gotten text messages saying, "Your kid's missing." Since Columbine, Virginia Tech, and Northern Illinois, it goes to show that these things are continuing, and they're continuing to escalate, so we'll all have to be prepared because we just don't know where it's going to happen, said Chief David Valkenberg. Campus police now train with the city police to be ready for an active shooter situation. Revenge of the Waco Gene from freedominourtime.blogspot.com, of course, noting now that it's homegrown terrorism. The last two notes on this from Copycat Effect. Oprah actually canceled her Columbine anniversary show on 420, so you got to at least give her a pat on the back for that. She at least correctly recognized that it turned them into celebrities and gave them too much attention. So Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect applauds Oprah canceling the Columbine anniversary show, and the other one where he notes that killers pick special dates. And they do. On both sides of the fence. But lastly, on the 420 meme, in looking for more things, I discovered an amazing documentary called The Columbine Cause. It's made by a guy named Evan Long, and it's available in its entirety on Google Video. The Columbine Cause is a feature-length video presentation based on public domain government records related to the official investigation of the Columbine High School shootings of April 20, 1999. It includes quotations from suspect interrogations and witness interviews as recorded in little before publicized police files, 911 recordings, and other rare items. You must watch this. It's not flashy. It's a voiceover to a slideshow, basically, essentially, and that's all you need. And it doesn't take a whole lot of CPU processing power. But it's not a big flashy show. All it is the documentation. One of the main amazing things that hit me from Evan Long's Columbine Calls is that any time in the depositions and in the records where any of the witnesses mentioned anyone other than Eric and Dylan as doing the shooting, it's redacted. I'd never heard the name Chris Morris or some of the other names. And I am happy to tell you that I believe this Sunday I'm going to have a Skype interview set up with Evan Long, the director of the Columbine Calls. So, like I said, you can watch it right on the page. You can also read the entire transcript again. It doesn't have to be flashy. All it does is show you the documents. and gives you links. And there it is. xmail.net/EvanLong/TCC The Columbine Cause. But back to our misleaders, Congress critters, corrupt bastards, almost to the top and bottom. An amazing story. Huge. And yet not surprising at all. Harman wiretaps DOJ and AIPAC. More massive corruption. We have a major scandal that has erupted involving Congress, the cabinet, and corruption. A wiretap recorded Representative Jane Harman, California Democrat, promising to intervene for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. This originally broke from CQ Politics. Representative Jane Harman, the California Democrat with a long-time involvement in intel issues, was overheard on an NSA wiretap telling a suspected Israeli agent that she would lobby the Justice Department to reduce espionage-related charges against two officials of the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee.
Music. Charged with conspiring to obtain secret information about America's policies in the Middle East. Information they shared with reporters and with officials of a foreign government. The foreign government in question is Israel. And with American politicians competing for decades now to see who can win the biggest friend of Israel designation, this case has been a political hot potato, to say the least. Condoleezza Rice, Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, former National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley are all set to testify for the defense. Official of the Defense Intelligence Agency, a man named Lawrence Franklin, already serving more than 12 years and more than 12-year sentence after being convicted of providing the materials to these suspected lobbyist spies. Now this week, a plot twist worthy of Parallax View. Did you ever see that? Warren Beatty? It's really good. In the investigation into Israeli spying, the feds have court-ordered wiretap of one of the suspects. The suspect they were wiretapping, according to three sources who spoke with Jeff Stein at CQ.com, had a conversation, a wiretapped conversation, with California Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman. Mr. Stein's sources say the transcript of that call reveals Ms. Harman saying she will try to get the charges reduced for those two lobbyists facing the spying charges if, in exchange, she can get a little help lobbying Nancy Pelosi to make her chair of the Intelligence Committee. Youch. She allegedly ended the conversation by saying, quote, "This conversation doesn't exist." So right then and there, the FBI reportedly decides that not only is it investigating Israeli spying, they've also got an offshoot investigation now into Jane Harman. Did Jane Harman break the law? Stein reports, quote, "Justice Department attorneys in the Intelligence and Public Corruption Units who read the transcripts decided that Harman had committed a completed crime, a legal term meaning that there was evidence that she had attempted to complete it. They were prepared to open a case on her." They were prepared to open a case on her. Okay, so at this point, we've gone from any James Bond movie, spying investigation, to Parallax View, spying investigation, smear congresswoman. Now, you ready for the next twist that makes this worthy of, like, 3 days of the Condor? Okay, next twist. The Justice Department is ready to open a case on Jane Harman. They have allegedly got her on a court-ordered legal wiretap offering to try to influence a criminal espionage case in exchange for a political favor. In the New York Times today, it actually says the favor was that billionaire Mighty Morphin Power Rangers guy would threaten House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that he would stop ponying up for Democrats unless Jane Harman got the Intelligence Committee job.
That's a nice little clip from Rachel Maddow. I like when, you know, they tie in the fact that this stuff has been made in films before. We're just always trying to figure out which is imitating which. Art, life, politics. I jumped the gun on that clip. That comes down a little bit more in the updates. But there's a lot here, and there's no way I can go through it all anyway. But I think you get the basic gist. Don't you? Jane Harman working a cover for Israeli spies. Interesting to note, flashback to November 2007 on MediaMonarchy.com, Jane Harman and one of her little subcommittees in the Simon Wiesenthal Center gave a little presentation on homegrown terrorism. And in that presentation, they show websites conflating 9/11 truth and jihadist websites. And they even threw in a little bit of you're the man now dog kind of shit with the Jews did it. There's tons of video. There's a Glenn Greenwald interview with Jeff Stein. There's other interviews with Jeff Stein. Wide circle of people knew about the Harmon wiretap. That's from Raw Story. Jeremy Scahill, of course, famous for exposing Blackwater, notes that this is a huge story. The case, known as the AIPAC espionage scandal, centers around allegations that at least two AIPAC staff members passed sensitive U.S. intelligence on Iran provided by Pentagon official Lawrence Franklin to Israel. In early 2006, Franklin pled guilty to espionage-related charges and was sentenced to 13 years in prison. The case against two indicted AIPAC staffers, Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman, is ongoing. Allegations that Harmon intervened in this case in an effort to win the spot as chair of the Intelligence Committee have been widespread since 2006, but the FBI investigation into Harmon was dropped for lack of evidence. So again, links in there to Time Magazine, to Alternet, to History Commons, to Wikipedia, on and on and on. Another flashback to April of 08 on Media Monarchy. Israel might have many more spies here, but to break it down from Kurt Nimmo, Harmon and AIPAC, more evidence of massive government corruption, notes that it should come as no surprise that Harmon was caught on a wiretap, offering to lobby the DOJ to reduce espionage-related charges against AIPAC officials, because, of course, much of Congress is beholden to the Israeli pressure group. This case is yet another example of how politics works in the District of Criminals. I love the tie-in with Saban, Mighty Morphin Power Ranger, media big dog, who notes, quote, I'm a one-issue guy, and my issue is Israel. Harmon goes back. She's been connected to AIPAC and corruption in Congress for a long time and should be drummed out and brought up on treason charges. Another flashback to August of last year, declassified docs shed new light on AIPAC espionage. Pelosi said she doesn't respond to threats. Bring it on. Saying, you know, you're going to give me the seat at the Intel Committee. So we get to the bottom where I have the video update of Rachel Maddow saying that this is like a real-life spy thriller where she notes 3 days of the Condor, the parallax view. Classic movie plot lines. It's like out of a movie. On that video that is on YouTube, I made a comment, and I would like to note it to you right now. Larry Franklin, the guy who passed the info to Weissman and Rosen, Larry Franklin was an adjunct professor at my school at the time this went down. Shepherd University, where he was an adjunct professor, that's where I graduated from. It's nestled in the eastern panhandle of West Virginia and only about an hour away from the District of Criminals. Over the last 10 years, that whole area has become infested with spooks. In the first week of 2000, Shepherd University hosted Israeli-Syrian peace talks, thanks in part to the new Clarion Inn, a new conference center that was built that could handle that kind of thing. If you'll recall, the Greenbrier Hotel, located in the heart of the state, it was also a hotel on the surface, too. But it turned out to, of course, be a doomsday bunker and Black Ops hut. Because, again, it's in West Virginia, it's nestled in the mountains, but it's just close enough to D.C. Speeding onward, and it gets worse and worse and worse. Torture tales, KSM, the Mumbai lone gunman, and CIA exemptions. We have learned from thinkprogress.org, as well as Fire Dog Lake, Memorandum.com, and on and on and on. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, the self-proclaimed mastermind of 9/11, was waterboarded 183 times in 1 month. 1 month. Marcy Wheeler digs through the recently disclosed Office of Legal Counsel memos authored by the Bush Justice Department and finds these startling statistics. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was waterboarded 183 times in March 2003, and Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded 83 times in August 2002. Wheeler concludes with links for you to all this. The CIA wants you to believe waterboarding is effective, yet somehow it took them 183 applications of the waterboard in 1 month to get what they claimed was cooperation out of KSM. That doesn't sound very effective to me. So what happens if you waterboard a guy hundreds of times in a month? Not only will he admit to being the main mastermind of 9/11, but he'll admit to blowing up things that weren't built by the time he was arrested. Debunked bullshit, L.A. terror. But the other guy, this is from the Times Online, Zubaydah. CIA used me to test brutal torture techniques. Abu Zubaydah, with a link to his entry on History Commons, where you'll find the complete 9/11 timeline. Abu Zubaydah, the alleged al-Qaeda mastermind, is the only known war on terror detainee to have gone through the gamut of torture methods adopted by the CIA months before they were legally endorsed. Which, of course, makes it legal. If I write a law, an executive order, saying I can fuck your kids on the White House lawn, it must be legal, because I say it is. Accounts he gave to the International Committee of the Red Cross leaked on the Internet last week reveal he believed he was being used as a guinea pig for a range of new techniques of quote-unquote coercive interrogation. Google that. But on to Press TV, with links to Wikipedia, as well as numerous flashback links we'll mention in a second, The Lone Gunman, Mumbai Confessions Under Torture. The lone surviving gunman of the Mumbai, India attacks, if you'll recall, back in November. The lone surviving gunman of the Mumbai attacks, Ajmal Amir Kasab, last name QASAB, says his confession was the result of torture and thus false. Kasab's defense lawyer Abbas Kamzi said Kasab had asked him to take back the confession on his behalf. Kazmi noted that the entire confession was extracted through coercion and torture and as a result was not a voluntary confession and therefore had nothing to do with him. This is while Professor Ujwal Nikam, N-I-K-A-M, had described Kasab's involvement in the Mumbai attack as a plot planned in Pakistan to commit a series of attacks across India. He talked of the gunman receiving training from Pakistan's intelligence professionals and cooperating with a major general as they prepared for the attacks. You don't have to dig very deep to discover that Pakistan's Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, the ISI, is in the pocket of the CIA. Flashbacks to the coordinated carnage in Mumbai, all on MediaMonarchy.com. 145 dead, false flag, UK intel ops and questions, foreknowledge, the hoax phone call, double cover. The Mumbai attacks is fishy, up one side and down the other. But lastly, we note on this Torture Tales posting from the BBC, the CIA torture exemption is not even legal. U.S. President Barack Obama's decision not to prosecute CIA agents who used torture tactics is a violation of international law, UN experts said. The UN Special Rapporteur on Torture, Manfred Nowak, N-O-W-A-K, who we, of course, noted back in January when he was asking the question, who's got the guts to prosecute the Bush criminals? But he said the U.S. is bound under the U.N. Convention Against Torture to prosecute those who engage in it. Mr. Obama released those four OLC torture memos outlining harsh interrogation methods sanctioned by the Bush administration. Mr. Nowak has called for an independent review and compensation for victims. The U.S., like all of those states that are part of the U.N. Convention Against Torture, is committed to conducting criminal investigations of torture and to bringing all persons against whom there is sound evidence to court. Nowak told that to the Austrian daily newspaper Der Standard. The memos approved techniques including simulated drowning, week-long sleep deprivation, forced nudity, and the use of painful positions, and also included putting them in rooms of bugs. Like some kind of hostel. And of course we know now that Obama isn't going to prosecute these guys. Because they were acting in good faith on the legal opinions issued after 9/11. I recall a bunch of guys who said they were just acting on good faith after the terrible things that went down at the Reichstag fire. You know what I'm talking about? Hitler burnt down the Reichstag, blamed it on his enemies, passed the Enabling Act, and it was on. 9/11, Trade Center, big-time terror, blamed on our enemies. The Patriot Act is passed, and all kinds of things are done, and people are acting in good faith. It's all built on lies. I was just following orders. Didn't work then, and it's not going to work now. That's why they're moving so quickly to clamp down on our food, on our webs, everything. They know that you're starting to figure this out, and you're going to be pissed. However, they want you to be pissed because they want you to go in the street and they want you to fuck shit up, which gives them the excuse to fuck you up. Let's shift gears as we wrap up and head into the lightning round here. Last 20 minutes of episode 120 of MediaMonarchy.com. Sam Donaldson is a JFK truther.
You mentioned the assassination. In his dying breath, I'd like to be at his bedside and say, did you do it? Meaning,
oh my goodness.
November 22nd, 1963. Look, I agree with all of
you.
Well, wait a moment. I was still open.
Asked to reflect upon the coming end of Fidel Castro's time and regime in Cuba, longtime ABC newsman Sam Donaldson had one last request, to be beside Castro's bed to ask if he was responsible for JFK's assassination. And you, of course, heard his co-hosts Peggy Noonan and Cokie Roberts. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. Come on, Sam. Where he says, quote, wait a moment. I think it is still open. And, of course, it is. We're going to mention the numerous parallels between JFK and 9/11 briefly in just a moment, but the flashback here is also worth checking out. Going back to April of 2007, Bill O'Reilly is a JFK truther. This, back when he was doing reasonably good work on Inside Edition, where they were doing investigations into CIA and Cuban connections into the JFK assassination. Now, I don't buy into the whole Tom Hartman, Lamar Waldron bullshit, the mob did it. Did the mob botch the crime scene? Did the mob change the parade route at the last minute? Did the mob run terror drills of the exact same things going on at the exact same time? Did the mob appoint a cover-up commission? The answer we're looking for is no. But now we got some media memes. We're going to wrap up with media memes, movies, and 9/11 updates. Media memes, Public Enemy, G.I. Joe, and Angels and Demons. Public Enemy tells the Coachella crowd about the Obama deception. This from Paul Joseph Watson. Public Enemy, one of the most influential rap groups in music history, took the opportunity at Coachella 2009 the other day to warn the audience about the Obama deception, referencing Alex Jones's recently released underground blockbuster documentary. The LA Times reports, with a link for you, that Public Enemy member Professor Griff, who appears in the Obama deception, quote, made repeated references to the Obama deception during the concert in California, which featured Paul McCartney, Morrissey, The Cure, Leonard Cohen, and tons more. Public Enemy had a 2005 record called New World Odor, and of course are noted for their seminal It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back record. The one thing, too, that I want to pull out of this article from Paul Joseph Watson, jumping down, noting, of course, the standing of Public Enemy and NWA and groups like them, as soon as hip-hop became a vehicle for political and personal awakening, it was seized and devoured by corporate America and MTV before gradually being deformed into what we see on television today, where black icons rap not about fighting the man or standing up to the system, but about how much money and sex they have while girls' asses wiggle in the background. We also noted a couple years ago, in August 2006, a few years ago, that Muse frontman Matt Bellamy, in their headlining gig at the Reading Festival in the UK, wore a t-shirt that said Terror Storm, referencing that previous Alex Jones film. So I've tried to cover numerous times on the show how many artists now are making anti-New World Order statements, like the amazing new record from Thievery Corporation, Radio Retaliation, where they talk about the Federal Reserve, the shadow government, martial law. Superdrag, on their new record, Industry Giants, has a song called Aspartame. Some of the clouds are not clouds. We had Beck singing about chemtrails, and on and on and on. From USA Today, 1 in 10 video gaming youths could be addicted. Can you become addicted to video games? Nearly 1 in 10 kids say they show signs of addiction. The links to the Harris poll from January 2007, where they get this research that was done and is printed, but you gotta pay for it, from the Psychological Science Journal. Addicted to video games. We also have a little ongoing series of G.I. Joe and New World Order propaganda. It's called Resolute, and it's an Adult Swim current G.I. Joe cartoon, because they're prepping you for the new movie that's going to come out, and you're going to love it, you're going to eat it up, military and entertainment complex bullshit. But even just the little bit that I watched of G.I. Joe Resolute shows biometrics and thumb scanning, and it's ridiculous. But a movie note, an Illuminati note, Catholic League claims Ron Howard is lying in Angels and Demons. This from Alex Constantine, where they note that the subject of Ron Howard's upcoming film, Angels and Demons, is about the Illuminati. But who's the Illuminati, and who's lying to who, and who's with the Knights of Malta, and the Freemasons, and the Vatican, and the God knows what, and I don't have time to get into it. Media memes, Public Enemy, G.I. Joe, and Angels and Demons. But as long as we're talking about that, Die Hard director John McTiernan indicted in a wiretaps case. From the Associated Press, a federal grand jury last Friday indicted a Hollywood director who had withdrawn a guilty plea to a charge accusing him of lying to federal agents investigating a celebrity wiretapping case. John McTiernan, who directed Die Hard and Predator, was indicted on two counts of making false statements to the FBI about private investigator Anthony Pelicano, and one count of perjury for allegedly lying to a federal judge while trying to withdraw his guilty plea. His attorney, S. Todd Neal, said the indictment's really nothing new and promised to rigorously defend his client. This goes on, but the connections are so interesting. Hit the flashback link to April 2008. Aaron Russo was target of assassination. The late Aaron Russo, of course, we know as the director of America, Freedom to Fascism, which notes, one, that the Federal Reserve is neither, and two, they want to chip you. Aaron Russo basically woke up in his last few years. And even though he built the careers of Bette Midler and produced Trading Places and was a world champion arm wrestler and invented some kind of thong underwear and brought Led Zeppelin to the States for some of their first gigs, the last thing he did was fight the New World Order. What came out in some of this Anthony Pelicano wiretapping case and Hollywood money shenanigans was that Aaron Russo was actually the target of an assassination. The other thing this connects to, or one of the other numerous things this connects to, and reminds me of what we just did a few weeks ago, Dark Knight director's brother arrested for murder, Christopher Nolan's brother, of course, arrested for murder, standing trial, trying to get money from Russian gangsters, or God knows what, But that just shows you that's how you get things done in Hollywood. It's also interesting to note Die Hard with a Vengeance, pre-9/11, pretty much lays out a 9/11-like heist. Die Hard with a Vengeance with Samuel L. Jackson and Jeremy Irons that involves fake terror to distract from a bank robbery. And it even involves Nova Scotia gold that, of course, was found underneath the trade centers, and once they secured it, Giuliani called off any more search and rescue. Which brings us to 9/11 updates. Jennings, JFK, Galloway, and Giuliani. We have some updates on the death of 9/11 eyewitness Barry Jennings. Originally reported back in September 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com, Barry Jennings, key witness to World Trade Center 7 explosions, dead at 53. No obituary, no public notice, nothing. Disappeared. Now, from Jack Blood, host of Deadline Live, he notes, and there's a whole interview and a whole conversation that you can check out and go into all this, because again, I don't have time. Dylan Avery, of Loose Change fame, hired a private investigator to look into Barry Jennings' death. The investigator ended up referring the case to law enforcement before refunding Dylan's money and telling Dylan never to contact him again. Very unusual, to say the very least. Dylan also paid a visit to the Jennings home. This Dylan Avery of Loose Change fame. There's also links and recordings of Corey Rowe talking about the same thing. When Dylan went to the Jennings home, he found it vacant for sale. Why would a highly paid PI refuse to continue his investigation? Why did he refer the matter to the police? Why is he not talking? What's he afraid of? Was he warned to cease and desist? If so, by whom? These are just some of the new questions revolving around the Barry Jennings case. In every major cover-up, from JFK to Iran-Contra, we can see one common thread. The untimely death of eyewitnesses. Barry Jennings was not only an important and credible eyewitness, but he openly refuted much of the government and media version of the events. He was, in other words, a liability. You should look at the amazing list of death counts surrounding JFK and Iran-Contra alone. When the head of the CIA, Colby, dies in a fucking canoe before he's supposed to testify. Oh, you didn't know about that? Another flashback to June of 08. This was when Jennings was still alive. WTC7 Barry Jennings, NIST leak, and the BBC hit piece. This all swirled around last summer where basically the BBC was doing a hit piece. Loose Change were trying to get solid information out and jump the gun and put it out even earlier on Barry Jennings, his whole interview, showing the discrepancies from what he said and how they cut it on the BBC hit piece. Barry Jennings basically died right before NIST issued their final Building 7 report. Was he a liability? George Galloway, member of Parliament, he has new doubts about the official 9/11 conspiracy theory. This from 9/11 blogger. I got a short clip. We'll do this because it's important. George Galloway, MP, had a New Yorker called Tom Feeley, F-E-E-L-E-Y, on his Talk Sport radio show within the other night, talking about 9/11 with a particular focus on the destruction of the Twin Towers and WTC-7. George opens the show explaining that he still holds Islamic extremists responsible, but a chance meeting with this Tom guy in New York has planted seeds of doubt in his mind. Now that I think about it, I'm not going to play it for you, because they just said. He says, he starts to say, oh, I have some doubts, and the things I really have doubts about are the things they always want everyone to focus on. The buildings, they look like controlled demo, the buildings, controlled demo, the buildings. They're gone. I believe other avenues of investigation are better. You don't really hear guys like Sander Hicks or Webster Tarpley or Daniel Hopsicker or Dave Emery talking about the buildings or controlled demolition. That's just the what. That's just the magician twirling his baton to catch your attention. That's the fake bomb hoaxes and explosions in Die Hard with a Vengeance. Hiding the real crimes. John Hankey, the director of JFK 2, The Bush Connection, as well as the assassination of JFK Jr., two fantastic documentaries. He has a quick, or rather, he has a long piece, but I have a quick clip from it, Same Killers, Different Day, where he notes there are a number of important parallels between the 9/11 attacks and the murder of JFK, notably the stand down of the most basic defense procedures, the outrageous cover-up and destruction of evidence, and the last name of some of the major perpetrators. Obviously, the Bushes were involved in 9/11. Less well-known and less obvious is the central role played by George Herbert Walker Bush in the Kennedy assassination. It's taken 40 years to collect the evidence to hang Kennedy's murder around Bush's neck. But we're not going to go into it now. A flashback to just last week, 9/11 updates, TV, truth, and breakthroughs, but we're going to end it with Giuliani. We mentioned him, of course, being connected to pedophile priests, but now he's angry at that Dutch TV jury on Devil's Advocate for exonerating Osama bin Laden. Of course, appropriately, from Fox News. A fake jury that exonerated Osama bin Laden from the 9/11 attacks following a televised mock trial on a popular Dutch program sends a disturbing message to the world and fuels conspiracy theories, says former New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani and other former U.S. prosecutors. Giuliani, former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, a den of criminals like the Dulles Boys. Giuliani, former U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York and former Republican presidential candidate, said programs like this are dangerous. Quote, it's such a bizarre and irrational ruling that I don't think it'll have any weight with anyone other than to fuel conspiracy theories. The clear damage it does is that it gives people who want to seize on irrational theories something else to talk about. I hope it's going to be dismissed as a very bizarre, aberrational decision. But it's not going to be. And that's going to do it for the 120th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's April 24th, 2009. Before we look at the creepy customers, let's glance back one more time at Google News as we see that this is definitely going to be a story, the pandemic story, swine flu, Mexico shutting schools. We now have cases documented in California and Texas. So if we were asking earlier if it's going to be some cyberspace war psyop or a food world order enviro health psyop, this would lean more towards the pandemic end. Just make sure you get vaccinated. You'll be okay. We also have an Oregon recruit arrested in a Fresno school scuffle. That's from the San Francisco Chronicle. And a little lockdown at the White House. Airplane causes scare at the White House and Capitol. This apparently just now happening as I'm telling you about 9/11 and drills. The Associated Press is reporting just an hour ago, airplane causes scare at White House Capitol. Pilot was in restricted airspace, then altered course after being told to. We don't have time to go into that, but it just shows you, never a dull moment here in the new world order. We're going to now look at the short list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. It's a funny one. It's a scary one. It's Spooktown. So we got Fort Bliss. Bliss.army.mil. We've got the Department of Veteran Affairs out of Long Beach. They were reading about the Econo crash, Holmes fronts, bank riots, and a global currency. We had the smdc.army.mil reading about social networking and spyware. We had NYU, Google accident at disease lab, April 2008. Oh, could that be at Plum Island where they created Lyme disease? I believe it is. Fort Gordon, NORAD, Spacecom, J6D, it's the joint something or other directorate, northcom.mil, reading about massive attack simulation to involve every state, terror drills we covered months ago on MediaMonarchy.com. We had the Department of State. We had the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons out of Voorburg, Netherlands, visiting. We also had the Navy Network Information Center out of Pensacola, Florida, and the DOD Network Information Center out of Alexandria, Virginia. And the DOD, we're reading about terror drills, curfews, GPS, and IP snooping. I don't have the time to tell you and to express how important your help is to me in doing this show. There's probably not a day goes by that I don't think about chucking all this shit and getting my own house in order. But as long as we got the internet, we got to spread the information of what's going down. You help me do that. My name is James Evan Pilato. This has been the 120th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. Like my man, Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.